The Holy Gospel according to Mark, the 13th chapter. As Jesus came out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what large stones and what large buildings." Then Jesus asked him, "Do you see these great buildings? Not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down." When he was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, "Tell us, when will this be, and what will be the sign that all these things are about to be accomplished?" Then Jesus began to say to them, "Beware that no one leads you astray. Many will come in my name and say, 'I am he,' and they will lead many astray. When you hear of wars and rumor of wars, do not be alarmed. This must take place, but the end is still to come. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places. There will be famines. This is but the beginning of the birth pangs." The Gospel of the Lord. Do you remember that first time, that moment in your life when you got to travel, take some sort of trip without your parents present? Do you remember the freedom that came in that moment, the independence, the sense of beginning to take your place as an adult in the world? It seems sort of silly now, but for me, that first experience was in fourth grade when my class from Dayton, Ohio, got on a tour bus and drove to the state capitol in Columbus to tour the Capitol building. Everything about this trip was exciting and new and amazing to me. From the moment we walked out of the building and there was a tour bus in front of the school rather than some boring old school bus. And as if that wasn't enough, this tour bus had TVs on it in a time when there weren't TVs just in everybody's pocket. And so it was way more impressive that there was a TV on this bus that we could watch shows while we drove to the state capitol. And as we pulled into Columbus in our bus, there were these huge buildings just towering over us. Now, I'm aware now as an adult that these buildings are not nearly as impressive as some elsewhere. But at the time, as a fourth grader, there were these huge buildings just towering over us. And everywhere we looked, there was traffic and there was noise and there were people in nice clothes hurrying from one building to the next. And we turned a corner, and there on the side of the newspaper building was one of those news tickers, right, where it's giving you the information of the day. At the time, it felt like I was pulling into Times Square. And then we took another couple turns, and there it was, the Ohio State Capitol building, sitting in its own little courtyard, separated off, surrounded by buildings that were taller and yet somehow more impressive and more imposing than the rest. As we got off the bus and formed our little groups of eight, I'm sure that we had some form of adult supervision with us, but my parents were not on the trip, and so I felt like I was having this experience all on my own. And we ventured off onto our tour, and everything about this building was incredible to me, from how old it was, to the carvings in the building, to the way they had formed the rotunda, to the history, to the courtyard that used to be outside but now was completely enclosed because too many pigeons were making their presence known on the shoulders of unsuspecting senators and representatives as they hurried from one place to the next. Everything about this building was incredible to me. And of course, the building's impressive in its own right, but for me, it was mostly my place in the world at the time that made it so impactful. Because as a fourth grader who was learning about Ohio history and laws and government, this building represented everything that was good and right and lawful in our world. This was the center of how we existed as a nation. And then as a fourth grader, I was taking this experience without any sort of parents on the trip. And it's as if I was seeing the world for the very first time. Getting to see and hear and experience things on my own without my parents telling me what I was supposed to be hearing or seeing or understanding, but getting to process that for myself. Perhaps you've had this sort of experience where for the first time you come back from a trip and you get to stand a little taller because suddenly you have seen the world. Perhaps the world is limited to a state house in your fourth grade class, but still, you're somebody now. It's this sort of experience that our disciples are having this morning. The best evidence that we have suggests that the disciples were probably teenagers when they started following Jesus. And so it's reasonable to assume that they would have traveled with their families to Jerusalem when they were children for feasts and festivals, as good Jewish families would have in the day. But this was very possibly the first time that they're going to Jerusalem without parental supervision. And so they're traveling there with their teacher, and they're seeing everything for the first time in a whole new way. They're seeing people from foreign lands speaking exotic languages. They're definitely seeing Roman soldiers patrolling the streets of Jerusalem. They're tasting new and exciting foods in the marketplaces, and then they turn a corner, and there it is, the temple. The center of their culture, the center of their nation, the center of their faith. Everything that was good and right and lawful and just was from this building. This was it for the disciples. To come and to see this, to open their eyes and see this incredible space all on their own, to take it in without their parents there to tell them how to feel. We can understand there the amazement that they express. Teacher, what large stones. What big buildings. Isn't this incredible? Jesus, look, do you see this? Do you see what we're looking at? And admittedly, the temple would have been incredible, a sight to behold, to be sure. If you've ever stood next to ancient pyramids or medieval cathedrals, you know the type of stones that we're talking about, just these massive pieces of stonework. Where you wonder to yourself, how could anyone move this thing, let alone place it so precisely? And as if that weren't enough for the disciples and for the Jewish faith at the time, the temple was not just the center of their culture and their faith, it was the house where God dwelled. So if you multiply the amazement that I had at seeing what is essentially an office building for senators and representatives, imagine how much more impressed and amazed we might be to see God's house. And this is what they express to Jesus. And I would imagine they were more than a little shocked, perhaps even disappointed, when Jesus' response does not bolster their amazement, but rather comes back to say, well, you see that big building? It's going to be destroyed. Not one stone's going to be left on another. Imagine how crushing a blow this would be to the disciples. To hear this teacher whom they loved, whom they'd given their lives to say the center of our life and our faith, it would be destroyed. For the disciples, this was a crisis on two levels. The first being that for this temple to be destroyed, that meant that the city and the nation around it would have had some terrible calamity happen to it. All of their friends and family were likely in danger or in trouble or even dead already if this building was destroyed. And on a second level, if this is the house where God dwells, and if God's house is destroyed, does that mean that God was defeated? Does that mean there was some other greater, more powerful God we should have been giving our lives to? Have we been backing the wrong horse all this time? What does this say about how God exists in the world? This is the crisis of faith, the crisis of life that Peter and James and John and Andrew are experiencing as they come to Jesus on the Mount of Olives, looking back over the temple, perhaps with a view similar to this, to say, Jesus, tell us when these things will happen. Tell us what the sign will be that this is coming. Just give us a hint so that we can prepare ourselves and our family. Jesus' words are not particularly comforting at first pass. The disciples are looking to Jesus for hope, for a promise, for mercy, for restoration perhaps, and instead, wars and rumors of wars, don't be alarmed. Nation's going to rise up against nation, that's for sure. Kingdom against kingdom, yep, you can check that one off the list. Oh, there's going to be earthquakes too, and don't forget famines, and this is just the beginning. This is just the beginning. In no uncertain terms, Jesus lets his disciples know that everything they have placed their trust in will be destroyed. Not just the physical structures, the buildings that they see, but the systems and the traditions and the rituals that they have bound themselves to, all of this will fall to dust and crumble. Not one stone will remain upon another. 2,000 years later, Jesus' words apply just as poignantly to our own lives. It's an opportunity for us to take stock for a moment and ask ourselves where we are putting our trust for the future. What are we relying on to provide for our family or for our retirement or for our medical expenses? Are we trusting in big buildings? Are we putting our faith into politicians to bring about justice and social mercy? Are we putting our faith into medical advances? Are we putting our trust into investment accounts and retirement accounts? Or are we putting our faith into something stronger? Because all of these things will crumble. Buildings will fall, highways will turn to dust, money will eventually be worthless, medical advancements will eventually cease to be enough. Monarchies, dictatorships, democracies too, they'll all fall short. Everything of this world, Jesus tells us, will be destroyed. Not one stone will be left upon another. It can feel pretty bleak and hopeless at a moment like this, especially in a week when we prepare ourselves to give thanks for the blessings that God has given us, to hear these words, to hear that all we hope and trust and love will be destroyed can be heartbreaking. But I left something off earlier. See, when Jesus talks to his disciples about earthquakes and famines, he doesn't only say this is just the beginning. He adds a few crucially important words saying this is only the beginning of the birth pangs. Those pains which tell us a labor is coming. The pains which promise it will get worse before it gets better, but there will be new life at the end. This is the beginning of God's work to bring about a new thing, of God's efforts to give birth to a new creation. This is the promise that Jesus gives to his disciples and gives to each of us, because we might find ourselves joining the disciples' concern, saying to ourselves, you know, if our world is all going to fall apart, then something terrible has happened. And worse yet, what does this say about our God who promised to be here, to love us, to care for us, to protect us? And Jesus' assurance that this is but the beginning of the birth pangs reminds us that this is not destruction for the sake of destruction. This is not destruction because some greater God has come in to defeat our God. This is destruction that leads to new life. Pain that leads to the birth of a new creation. Because all those things that we see, the structures and systems that we love and trust, it will all fall to dust. but God will give birth to a new creation, to a new thing. See, last week I told us and encouraged us to hold on to hope in the midst of fear, in the midst of trials, to hold on to that hope. That hope would never fail us. And it's true. So long as we place our hope in the right thing. Are we placing our hope in that which will be destroyed? In the big buildings, in the medical advances, in the politicians, in the investment accounts? Are we placing our hope in that which will turn to dust? Or are we placing our hope in God? The God of Abraham and Sarah, the God who brought the Israelites out of Egypt, the God who fed Elijah in the desert, the God who numbered the hairs on your head, the God who sent Jesus Christ into the world to bring about a new reign of salvation, the God who keeps and fulfills promises, the God who promises to give birth to this new thing. Are we placing our hope in this God? Because the truth is, everything we see and know and experience in this life will fail us. Even this beautiful building in which we stand will eventually crumble and fall. But placing our hope in the God of life, and the God who has sent Jesus to bring new creation into existence, who through your own baptisms has already been working in your own life to bring this new creation into existence, this hope will never fail us. And so even when the world crumbles around us, even when we see wars and famines and earthquakes and nation against nation, even when we are certain that this is the end, even in that moment, we can stand with hope, and we can look around and see the new creation that God is bringing into existence, the creation that God intended us to see from the beginning, and we get to see it all anew for the very first time. God loves each of you. And I do too.